Thank you, Howard. Good morning. I'm Commander Matt Payne. I've come from the Maritime Warfare Centre in HMS Collingwood, just outside of Portsmouth. We're responsible for developing tactic and doctrines and supporting the front line out to a time scale of about 5 years, and then longer term out to about 2035 in conjunction with the Defence Concepts and Doctrine Centre. While you were all having your conference last year talking about wargaming, I had no clue about wargaming at all. I'd never even sat in on a wargaming. I'm not a hobby wargamer, had no experience at all. So why am I here? Why am I standing here in front of you today? I've been in the Maritime Warfare Centre for 10 months now, and every day it becomes increasingly clear that there is a strong utility for wargaming across all that we do, to the point where it's starting to dominate my daily work. We're running war games on a regular basis now, and we're starting to reach wider into the maritime community and developing wargaming doctrine in line with the DCDC handbook, which has fortuitously just been issued as our wargaming capability takes off. I suppose the first question is, does the Royal Navy do wargaming? I never realised it did. And since I've got into the post, I've started to do a lot more research into it. And I have been pleasantly surprised in some areas. We have a long tradition of wargaming in the Royal Navy. In 1906, Fred T. Jane, of Jane's Fighting Ships fame, produced the Rules for Royal Navy Wargaming, which was heavily utilised in the run-up to World War I. In 1921, the Royal Navy produced the Royal Navy Wargaming, which provided instructions for the tactical and strategic exercises to investigate doctrine and the application of command principles. All very interesting, but actually I managed to get hold of a reprint of both these games quite recently, and it was surprising to see, or probably shouldn't have been surprising to see, it's very similar to what we're trying to push ahead today. Paul Strong will talk to you later today about the Western Approaches Tactical Unit, which is the forerunner to our own Maritime Warfare Centre today, who utilised established wargaming techniques to fight the U-boat threat in World War II. They were very successful not only in countering the current threat but predicting the new threat and training a significant number of anti-submarine warfare officers that were instrumental in winning that war. The problem being that since then, while a number of navies have invested heavily in wargaming, we've rather let it wither on the vine. And so our capability is almost being built from scratch again, rather than looking at some nations which have been able to build on what they learnt over the past few years. Should you ask the majority of naval officers today what is wargaming? As Graham said at the start, they'd almost certainly explain to you nervously about the procedure for courses of action comparison within the estimate process, the military planning process. To some extent, that's true, but that's not the entirety of wargaming. Should you ask a senior officer what is wargaming, they'll wax lyrical about complex scenarios, the use of computer simulations, audiences of 150 people or more. Again, in some ways that's true, but again, not the entirety of wargaming. The reality is that wargaming is not recognised well in the Royal Navy. There's been a lack of investment, and the use of the term even wargaming leads to often dismissive comments about playing games. So it is an uphill struggle. That said, I hope the attitude is being checked, and should you ask me in 5 years' time, or should you ask any naval officer in 5 years' time, what is wargaming, I hope the answer will be very, very different. Following the recent dictum from the highest levels that we are to reinvigorate wargaming across defence, one of the first things I did was reach out into the wider naval community and find out what is going on today. And I was pleasantly surprised that there is some good activity that utilises wargaming techniques. From what Ed Oates is doing in the aviation community, in the training world, through to some forward-leaning command teams who used established wargaming techniques to develop frontline plans. Most recently for HMS Bulwark, as she went through the straits at the bottom of the Red Sea, Bab el-Mandeb, and how she actually made her plan using a war game. Within the Maritime Warfare School, within the Maritime Warfare Centre, we've used a seminar-style process for a number of years, mainly as a teaching tool, For the tactical estimate and for what's often disparagingly called among many people BOGSAT knowledge exchange forums. These TACEXs are heavily scripted and they're very much aimed to fulfill a training requirement. The operational knowledge exchange, again, very useful. We don't teach, we exchange knowledge down in the Maritime Warfare Centre. It's the school that does the teaching. But they lack any real adversarial challenge, which is the biggest problem, and use a fairly heavily scripted main events list to draw out the process, which again draws out the teaching points. The use of these TACEXs may have perpetuated the misconception that we have a handle on wargaming, whereas in reality it's just another novel way of delivering lectures. Confucius said, I hear, I forget, I see, I remember, I do, I understand. What we're doing down at the moment with the TACEXs are the I see and I remember function. I think everybody in this room would probably agree wargaming is the I do and I understand. We do, however, maintain a very useful facility down at Collingwood for seminar games. We've got a large tactical floor. We can seat up to about 150 people. Gridded floor. We've got a large selection of world maps of various scales. And some good IT connecting syndicate rooms where we can put separate teams out to do the planning. So it's not that we've lacked the tools over the last number of years, but rather the experience and skills to grow our wargaming capability. So really, what are we doing about this? We're hopefully on the first steps of to recovery. There's been a recognition at the higher levels of the value of wargaming. Mainly prompted it by VCDS's call to reinvigorate Wargame across the service and what we see the other services are doing with Eagle Warrior, Agile Warrior and various other smaller scale events. We do need, however, to tread extremely carefully to avoid devaluing the capability, but more than anything damaging our credibility at the early stages by delivering less than adequate products. Just because the call goes up, just because VCDS has said do wargaming, and the call goes up, send a wargame, it used to be send a gunboat, these days it's send a wargame, doesn't mean it's the right tool for the job. So we have to exercise caution when we're approached to develop these wargames and recognise the resources required as well to deliver a bespoke event that further perpetuates the reputation of wargaming throughout the Royal Navy. It's also, I think, very important we train those who are responsible for designing the games. There's very few people with experience. Most of those are hobby wargamers. I know there have been courses running defence in the past, but they're not standing courses at the moment. But the leap from gamer to game designer is a lot larger than we anticipated. We need to understand the breadth of skills required to develop these games. And also need to make sure that the scenarios are properly tailored to required outputs. Moderators and rules are correct to achieve the correct level of realism, correct level of simulation. And more than anything else, we need to convince everybody that we don't need to play to win every time. It's a terrible trait among the Navy. Well, it's a terrible trait among the military. We do like to play to win. With what I've seen so far, that often leads to a level of cheating. We need to look at it again and say we need to explore what works and what doesn't so we can turn a losing strategy into a victory in what is a safe to fail environment. And that safe to fail environment is a phrase you'll have all heard a number of times already during the conference and one we very much push ahead. I do sometimes get a very odd look from senior officers when I talk about a safe to fail environment. I'm always told no, we should never fail. But once you start to explain, we're not failing as the military, we're not failing of naval officers. We're understanding where the procedures and the practices we have in place don't work and therefore fail, and then turning them round into success. And then people start to look at it in a slightly different line. We also need to be more realistic about our enemies. Don't underestimate our opponents. So we often see a cartoonish representation fundamentalist enemies or we underestimate weapon systems, both those designed for a specific person or those being for a specific purpose or those being utilised innovatively by less well-financed opponents. And understand that those simulations of the enemy need to be accurate, or else we will find ourselves underestimating them in the real world, and suddenly a much less resourced opponent will give us a bloody nose when it could have been avoided again in that safe-to-fail environment. Alongside the war game designers, I think it's important we need to prepare the players, not just for the individual games, but inculcate a culture of wargaming across the Navy. I've already proposed that wargaming is introduced at the Officers Training College at Dartmouth, and we use a set of standard procedures, common tools across the fleet, both the sea and shore, to make officers wargaming aware, and so they can take it forward. And often they choose it as the weapon of choice when they're doing their planning and when they're investigating new tactics and techniques. Within the Maritime Warfare School, Maritime Warfare Centre, I apologise for saying that, we're co-located. We've initiated two parallel projects to build a centralised capability for problems and also trying to build a wargaming tool for broader use. The first thing we're doing is Project Proteus. Proteus was the god of sea change, quite appropriate, hopefully. It's aimed at reinvigorating wargaming in the naval service and aims to put it on a programme footing. It's a series of increasingly sophisticated events following the aligned to Maritime Strategy 2035, and it's primarily going to be focused on task group operations, with each layered game adding extra complexity to the wargaming methodology we're using to build our capability and establish this standing resource. All serials are programmed to deliver assured data, primarily in support of funded programs that are useful to operations, tactics, exploration, or force development. So by putting that caveat on it, we're hoping to make sure that we secure funding against Project Proteus. Wargame development will follow the process detailed in the DCD Wargaming Handbook, so we develop in line with the rest of defence. We're not going off in our own direction within the Navy, and there's a joint approach, and I think Nigel's already made it clear the importance of that joint approach to what we do. And again, it's not only there to sell wargaming to the rest of the maritime community, but it's also to develop our own wargaming capability, so in future people will be able to approach the MWC at the appropriate time, and we will be able to help to design the wargames to support their problem solving. Force levels for relatively early events are going to remain low to avoid over ambitious gameplay, and audiences have been selected to have a balance between wargame development capability and force development to the sponsor organisation. As we become better at what we do, the sponsor will get more out of it. But at the moment, it's about 50-50 as to what we're both getting out of the wargames that we're starting to play. The initial game of the Proteus series was played in June this year and examined the operating patterns and capabilities of the new River-class offshore patrol vessel, a new type of vessel that's just being introduced in service. And is going to take up a lot more of the lower level of policing tasks that we use high-end frigates for today, that will then be freed up to go and support carrier operations, carrier task group enabled operations. A number of valuable lessons were learned from that very first game, principle which is the extensive preparation required for this type of game and the requirement for close liaison with war game experts, and Colin was a great help as we developed this process. We do regularly engage, as I've said, in tabletop tactics and warfare debate, but some of the distinctive characteristics of wargaming really challenged us. Turn-based consequential evolution of events, players' decisions actually pushing us off in a different direction to those that we would have gone in had we just had a well-scripted main events list. Rolling dice for probability assessment, that always raises a few eyebrows when you get naval officers in the room. When you then explain why you're doing it and what it achieves, people are a lot more comfortable with the technique, but at first it is very much alien. Execution of the war game is generally successful. More balance is required from the scenario we write, between the scenario writer and the game itself, and we found ourselves pushing out a lot of background information. and a lot of pre-reading that really bogged people down and didn't spend enough time explaining how we wargame, the rules of the game, how we expected the event to unfold. And so therefore we found that as the game went on, we spent far too much explaining to people each different step rather than going in understanding how a wargame worked. Our biggest lesson was, and our most important lesson identified, was the importance of data capture. Clearly the war game is not just the simulation itself, it's the development, it is the war game, sorry, the simulation, but it is all about what the output is. We found ourselves swamped by data that we couldn't analyse, and after the game, a lot of the information that we collected in was unintelligible. We hadn't put the procedures in place at the very outset. Proteus Wargame 1 was a useful introduction to the concept of wargaming. It highlighted a lot of complexities and the scale of the effort involved, but also it focused on that clearly defined process for development of wargaming capability. Parallel programme that we're developing, I'm writing at the moment, I've cleverly dubbed Wargame in a Box, because it's a wargame and it's going to come in a box. I attempted to develop a scenario at first, which was a fairly complex game, and not coming from a background in games, probably overly ambitious, which looked at a single scenario down in the bottom of the Red Sea in the Straits of Bab el-Mandeb. I sent it out to every single ship, every single submarine, every minesweeper, every air squadron in the fleet. So that's about, actually, believe it or not, about 150 different organisations. From that, I got one response, and that was the captain of a ballistic missile submarine, not ones that we put down in the Straits of Bab el-Mandeb very often, and he said, "I didn't really like the format of your email." That's it. That is the only response I got, which was a little bit demoralising, and initially I looked at it and thought, actually, it's because the game's rubbish. Maybe I've got that wrong. I know Tom has taken that game and turned it into a useful game, Maritime Kriegsspiel. So I don't think it was the game. I think it was just people's attitude to wargaming. So we've gone back to a really basic point and thought, what can we do? What can we get out there to ships? And what can we get to shore establishments to make them understand wargaming? We've gone back to the drawing board and we're starting to build a kit that can be issued throughout the Navy or to wider organisations. It doesn't have to be a naval war game, it could be across all three branches of services or it could be used as a commercial war game as well. And using standard wargaming methodology, we can build specific maritime wargaming scenarios within that kit. A key advantage of wargaming in the box is the availability of a relatively simple rules-based system. That doesn't rely on established mapping, and it's simple to set up and can be adapted to a multiplicity of land or maritime scenarios. Units can game their own issues, or alternatively organisations such as our own in the Maritime Warfare Centre can initiate operational challenges. And then we can solicit a crowdsourcing type response to help us to build tactic and doctrine and get a lot of different perspectives. Again, very much as long as we've got that post-game analysis data capture correct, and that's the bit we're working on at the moment. Participation isn't constrained by rank or rate, and actually sessions that we've seen so far with the very basic kit we've got so far get a really good new perspective from very junior officers, often with very little experience in certain warfare officers areas, who come up with some really good novel stuff for us to push on. 1 minute. I'm very very close to finishing. The key is the flexibility of the tools. It is a simple scenario, yet sufficient detail in order to support the scenario being gamed. It doesn't rely on a vast database of maps. You can see from the diagram, it's a plain board in a Latin long style grid, further subdivided into 12 by 12 hexes. There's no pre-printed features on the board apart from a compass rose. Other units' capabilities simulated by coloured counters, borders, national borders, territorial borders, bottom contours, things like that are all simulated by coloured string. I spent a very useful weekend dyeing bits of string with food dye, actually, and most of it seems to have come off in my hands now. We Alongside these current initiatives, we need to be able to map out a realistic timeline. I think before we even get people to understand wargaming in its very basic format, we're going to need about 12 months. Proteus is designed over a two-year timescale with increasing complexity to the games. And then I think as we're looking at integrating it into training, the wider defence community as a joint capability, we're looking at a five-year programme, which is cognizant with our five-year outlook for the Maritime Warfare Centre. We need to understand the war game is not just a simulation, but a totality of development, play, and analysis, or worse, we are really just playing a game. And so I think, in summary, we're on the first steps of a very long and winding yellow brick road. And we do have a programme. If you ask somebody in the Royal Navy in 5 years' time what is wargaming, you will get a very different answer, and I'd like to see a lot more dark blue faces, dark blue uniforms, in the audience this time next year. Just finish with a recommendation. When I was starting this job, I was in the middle of reading a Philip Dick novel, Philip Dick collection of short stories, and there is a story he wrote called Wargaming, and it's really good in demonstrating the fundamental principles of wargaming. It's not about wargaming itself, but the most successful game is the simple scenario that gets people enthused, gets people playing, and gets people talking about gaming and want to play again and again. And I think that's one lesson I've really taken away. We need to get people talking and want to play games again and again for it to be a success.
Thank you, Matt.